from Awakening the Buddha Within by Lama Sarya Das. In Mahayana Buddhism, one is encouraged to take what we call the Bodhisattva vow. Taking this vow means you understand the world's pain and you commit to work for the enlightenment of all. That means all the people, all the creatures, including all the inhabitants of the air and sea. Insects, birds, shellfish, dolphins, whales and sharks. All the shiny little eyes in the dark forests, as well as all the creepy, crawly, buzzing things trying to get in and chew on your house or on you. The first time I heard the Bodhisattva vow was in 1971, and I was at Lama Thubten Yishi's monastery in Nepal. I felt overwhelmed by the magnitude of it all, and I'm still somewhat intimidated by it. Lama Yishi explained the vow very simply. He said, "Think of what you want and realize that all beings want and need the same things. They are just seeking it through different ways. If you were to take the Bodhisattva vow, you would commit yourself in the following way. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to liberate them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transcend them. Dharma teachings are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it." So now I move on to the main topic of my discussion. I understand healing month, in terms of the sort of theme of months that the church does. I thought I'd look at healing and how it sort of relates to transformation from a Buddhist view, particularly through something referred to as the Brahmavil Viharas. In Buddhism, it is thought that true love has the power to heal and transform us, and in the process, bring deep meaning to our lives. The Buddha proposed that there are four elements, or Brahma Viharas, that make up the true source of love. The four elements are Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Abhigisha. So let us take a look at these four healing and transformative elements in a bit more detail. The first aspect of true love is Maititra, or metta in Pali, the intention and capacity to offer joy and happiness. In order to develop this, we have to look and listen deeply. From this continued practice of looking and listening deeply, we start to notice what to do and also what not to do when trying to make others happy. If you offer something that is not needed in a relationship, then that is not metta. You have to recognize the real situation, or you could offer something that actually brings unhappiness. Without the deep understanding that our practice affords us, what we consider to be love is not true love. It is important to look deeply in order to see and understand the needs, aspirations, and suffering of those we love. Everything needs love. Love helps to nurture us. It can bring us joy and well-being. Now, we have all probably heard the expression, "Nature is red in tooth and claw." But there are many aspects of nature that appear to bring us joy and well-being. For example, we might think that we are loved by the air. We respond well, hopefully, to fresh air. It makes us happy and well. And we respond poorly to bad air. It makes us unhappy and unwell. We are also loved by something as simple as the trees. Trees contribute to our health. They make us healthy. We might also notice that in order to be loved, we have to love, which means we have to have deep understanding, such that in order to continue to practice true love, we have to take an appropriate action or non-action to nurture the air, the trees, as well as our relationships. Maya tree can be translated as love or loving kindness. Some Buddhists might prefer loving kindness. They find the word love too loaded. Some stick with the word love, believing that words sometimes get sick and we have to heal them by just using them more appropriately. We often use the word love to mean appetite or desire, such as in I love cake. By using our language more carefully, we can restore the meaning to such a beautiful word. The word Maitri has roots in the word Maitra, which means friend. In Buddhism, the primary meaning of love is friendship. We all have the capacity to love, and we can develop this source of energy by nurturing an unconditional love that does not expect anything in return. Next on the list, the second aspect of true love is karuna, or the intention and capacity to relieve and transform suffering and life and sorrows. Karuna is often translated as compassion. However, if we pull the word compassion apart, we find that this may not be an entirely accurate translation. Compassion is made up of the words kon, together with, and passion, to suffer. However, Buddhism is not suggesting that in order to remove suffering from another, we need to suffer also. It's not a spiritual form of misery loves company approach. Healing practitioners, for example, can relieve a person's suffering without experiencing the same actual suffering in themselves. If we were to experience reciprocal suffering, there is a good chance we might be weakened to a point where we're unable to help. But in absence of a better word, compassion is still widely used to translate karuna, and I will use it here. In Buddhism, it is suggested that in order to develop compassion in ourselves, we need to practice mindful breathing, deep listening, and deep looking. The Lotus Sutra describes this as the Bodhisattva who practices looking with the eyes of compassion and listening deeply to the cries of the world. Compassion involves deep concern. You know the other person is suffering, so you sit with them. You look and listen deeply enough to be able to touch their pain. You are in deep communication, and that alone can bring some relief. I'm going to finish off this examination of compassion with a quote from a Dharma talk by Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese Buddhist monk and peace activist. One compassionate word, action or thought can reduce another person's suffering and bring them joy. One word can give comfort and confidence, destroy doubt, help someone avoid a mistake, reconcile a conflict, or open a door to liberation. One action can save a person's life or help them take advantage of a rare opportunity. One thought can do the same, because thought always leads to words and actions. With compassion in your heart, every thought, word, and deed can bring about a miracle. When I was a novice, I could not understand why, if the world is filled with suffering, the Buddha has such a beautiful smile. Why isn't he disturbed by all the suffering? Later I discovered that the Buddha has enough understanding, calm and strength. That is why the suffering does not overwhelm him. He's able to smile to suffering because he knows how to take care of it and transform it. We need to be aware of the suffering, but retain our clarity, calmness and strength so we can help transform the situation. The ocean of tears cannot drown us if karuna is there. That is why the Buddha smile is possible. Sticking to my notes then. So moving on to number 3 in our list of The third element of true love is mudita, often translated as joy. True love should always bring joy to ourselves and to the ones we love. A simple test in a relationship is that if our love does not bring joy to both of us, it is not true love. In Buddhism, it is often considered that happiness relates to both body and mind, while joy relates primarily to mind. An important distinction when considering the nature of joy. In Buddhist texts, you may see something akin to the following example given with respect to the difference between joy and happiness. Someone travelling in the desert sees a stream of cool water and experiences joy. On drinking the water, they experience happiness. Dwelling happily in the present moment. We don't rush to the future. We know that everything is here in the present moment. If we become mindful even for a moment of our own existence and which of our various faculties are still in good working order, we can often find, even in the smallest observation, an experience of a thought, form, or attribute that happens to us wondrous and refreshing. By resting in mindfulness, we can touch those things and our mind of joy arises naturally. We might come to notice that joy contains happiness and happiness contains joy. In Buddhism, it might often be said that that mudita means sympathetic joy or altruistic joy. The sort of happiness we feel when others are also happy. But many might also consider that the meaning is too limited, as it discriminates between self and other. Another way of considering a definition of mudita is as a joy filled with peace and contentment. Think about how it feels when one can rejoice in the happiness of others, but also rejoice in our own well-being. How can we feel joy for another person when we do not feel joy for ourselves? There should be no limitation on joy. And the final of the four elements, the fourth element of true love, is that apikisha, there's a problem with this one, which means equanimity, non-attachment, non-discrimination, even-mindedness, or letting go. If we break down the word once again, apa means over, and ikisha. So iksha means to look. You might climb to a higher vantage point to be able to look over the whole situation, not bounded by one particular view or another. It presents another opportunity to observe the nature of your love, so that if your love has attachment, discrimination, prejudice, or clinging in it, it's not true love. There is a common misunderstanding that this sort of concept in Buddhism can mean indifference. But it becomes apparent through daily practice that true equanimity is neither cold nor indifferent. Apikisha has the mark of something often translated as the wisdom of equality, the ability to see everyone as equal by not discriminating between self and other. In a conflict, despite our concerns, we can remain impartial, able to love and to understand both sides. That way, we are able to let go of discrimination and prejudice and the boundaries between self and other. To quote again from Thich Nhat Hanh, as long as we see ourselves as one, as the one who loves and the other as the one who is loved, as long as we value ourselves more than others or see ourselves as different from others, we do not have true equanimity. We have to put ourselves into the other person's skin and become one with them if we want to understand and truly love them. When that happens, there is no self and no other. Without apikisha, love can become possessive. A summer breeze can be very refreshing, but if we try to put it in a tin can so we can have it entirely to ourselves, the breeze will die. our beloved is the same. They are like a cloud, a breeze, a flower. If you imprison them in a tin can, they will die. Yet many people do just that. They rob their loved one of their liberty until they can no longer be themselves. They live to satisfy themselves and use their loved one to help them fulfill that. That is not loving, it is destroying. Oftentimes we think we love someone, but if you do not understand their aspirations, their needs, their difficulties, they are a prisoner of love. True love allows you to preserve your freedom and the freedom of those you love. That is what Apikisha represents. So in closing, and very shortly, on reflection, what did we notice? Perhaps we became aware that healing through transformation can come from loving kindness, compassion, joy, and the practice of just letting go. Thank you.